everyone. This is Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com. I am Amelia Dalton, and ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to be the first one to tell you this. Groundbreaking information. It's going to be a shock to some of you, and to some of you, not even a surprise in the slightest. Skynet is happening. If you don't know what Skynet is, okay, no, we're not actually talking about the British military satellite system. If you don't know what the other Skynet is, then please get out your How to Be a Geek, Nerd, and/or Engineer handbook, Chapter 7, Line 45, The Terminator Series, Arnold Schwarzenegger et al. So, not to keep any of our sci-fi laggards behind, but we all know that someday, we will create an artificially intelligent fleet of military robots that will attempt to destroy mankind. Insert Arnold here. We all know this, right? So, we're a lot closer than ever before. And no, we're not talking about the AI side of this. No, we've been talking about that on Fish Fry for years. Good stuff. No, I'm talking about the metal shape-shifting, holy, did he just turn into a, whoa, that stuff. In a recent study at North Carolina State University, researchers found that they could manipulate metal, and not just that, oh no, folks, they have made liquid metal that can shape itself into a variety of different shapes and sizes. T-1000. Okay, so how did they create this pancake-like metal that can be both spread out and brought back to firmness? Well, they applied a 1-volt charge to a liquid metal alloy of gallium and indium in water, which created a surface oxide that allowed for the manipulation of the metal's surface tension. Now, we all know that since, now-ish, it's the surface tension of metal that has made it impossible to form liquid metal into any shape other than a sphere. Well, I think it's a quote from the paper released earlier this year that says it all. These properties can be harnessed to induce previously unidentified electrohydrodynamic phenomena for manipulating liquid metal alloys based on gallium, which may include shape reconfigurable metallic components in electronic, electromagnetic, and microfluidic devices without the use of toxic mercury. Wow. All right, if you want to check out a whole bunch of cool stuff about this liquid metal study, I've included a couple links under the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, including a link to a super dense yet interesting white paper and a video of this stuff in action. Check it out. Now, before we can build Skynet or build the counter-revolutionary forces led by the one and only John Connor, we must be able to connect the communication dots. We need a whole slew of wireless protocols. We need to get the internet onto something without a screen. Right? This week, my first guest is John Beale from Texas Instruments, and we're talking about SimpleLink. Check it out. My guest today is John Beale, Wireless Connectivity Solutions at Texas Instruments. Thanks so much for joining me today, John.
Hi, thank you very much.
Talk to me about SimpleLink. Now, what is it? Why do I need it?
Sure. So SimpleLink is a term that we use to show how we've taken many, many different wireless technologies. We've got the broadest wireless technology portfolio in the industry, and we can connect you via Zigbee, 6LoWPAN, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, GPS, NFC. It goes on and on. And basically took a lot of the functionality that we have used in the past and made it very much more easy for customers to use, either at an MCU level or even lower level, so that they can get the solution out the door as quickly as possible.
What kind of markets are you looking at? I can see a
sensor tag development kit over there, an audio sync reference design?
We're very broad, so we're going after lots of different markets, including automotive, industrial, health and fitness, and you name it. We're there because it goes everywhere, right? So we're seeing BLE take off quite a bit, I would say, and Zigbee is becoming prevalent in the home automation space, so that's very popular there, that or 6LoWPAN. Obviously, Wi-Fi is just pretty much everywhere, as expected, and then we're seeing Bluetooth streaming audio, whether it be for soundbars or whatnot, is also taking off. It's everywhere, and it runs the gamut, and we're ready to talk about any wireless technology we need to.
All right, John, what is the coolest thing you've seen created with SimpleLink?
Good question. Our SimpleLink solutions based on BLE would be one of the key solutions. We've seen a lot of people take a BLE solution, not just use it for Internet of Things activity. They're actually taking it and they put it into a device that doesn't have a screen, that doesn't have, you know, a keyboard or anything like that. And for you to be able to gather information about that product automatically, like sending you proactively a link to like the user guide manual or more information about it. That seems kind of simple, but again, you don't have to have an RS-232 or a USB port to try to extract information of how that device is working. Is the battery getting low? Is the battery about to go dead? Do I need to order more new parts? Whatever it might be. That is the kind of applications that are pretty exciting, that it's not inherently Internet of Things, but it is at the same time, because you can replace how we've typically gotten information about something, especially when it's closed. You know, we always forget to throw out the manual for whatever we buy, where are we going to get it? And then the question is, okay, something's broken on it, I want it to get fixed. If people just add to their very simple MCU-based systems, that MCU pretty much is in everything, if they just add a little BLE chip, they could really make the user experience that much better.
So, John, where can my audience go for more information?
The easy tag to go to is www.ti.com/wireless connectivity or www.ti.com/IoT.
Well, John, it was a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks so much for talking to me today.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Okay, we have that IoT thing down, sort of. But what about some embedded processing to go with it? Of course. My next guest is Artem Aginsky, also from Texas Instruments, and we're getting down to some serious embedded MCU action.
My guest today is Artem Aginsky, Business Development Manager, Embedded Processors Catalog at TI. Now, Artem, you're here to talk with me about the C5000 ultra-low-power DSPs. Now, tell me, you're saying this is the industry's lowest power 16-bit DSP?
Yeah, this family for us has been the lowest power in the industry. We're able to provide fixed-point DSP performance in the 16-bit space, lower than any of our competition. And we'd like to continue that phase with our latest C5517 that we're announcing today.
Tell me a little bit about the software side of this.
Sure, absolutely. You know, at TI, we like to enable our customers to differentiate on our platforms. And so what we do is we provide complete development platforms. You get both the hardware development tools like EVMs and different kinds of modules to enable quick development, as well as software packages to go around there. Lots of example, lots of drivers, lots of peripherals that go around it. Now, in a typical processor, you need an operating system. But because we're doing ultra-low power, very small footprint, we want to make sure we eliminate that overhead. So our DSPs actually run on a BIOS instead, which is even easier to get started. So it's really what we would call a chip support library, where you get all the peripherals, all the connectivity of the device, with tons of examples on how to do it in a very simple package to get started. And that all is part of our Code Composer Studio.
Very nice. Now, this is for audio and vision analytics. Tell me a little bit more about the end use case here.
Sure, absolutely. Well, DSPs, you know, they enable applications that need number crunching, right? That's the typical advantage of it. And one of the markets that we see expanding today is analytics, right? And audio and vision analytics are kind of the start there. Now, traditionally, you would need a much bigger DSP to do, you know, analytics, analyze the video and things like that. What we're trying to do is to reduce the footprint, the size, and the power consumption by reducing the footprint and enabling the performance to go up. Essentially, these come with a lot of pixels, a lot of numbers to crunch, and the DSPs are perfect for it, and so we're trying to continue to enable that.
Tell my audience where they can go for more information.
Absolutely. For more information on the C5517 device, I recommend going to ti.com/C5517, so the C5517, where we have lots of example code, information on tools, and general availability information.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining me today. It was a pleasure learning about this.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
another prominent technology that will be crucial to both the rise of Skynet and its eventual downfall is, of course, FPGAs. But let's talk about today's FPGA design instead of maybe one 50 years from now. Okay. One of the most important factors in getting real performance from your FPGA design, yes, getting it to work the way you intended in real life, not just in the lab or on paper, is the optimization in synthesis and place and route. In a hot off the virtual presses episode of Chalk Talk entitled Increase FPGA Performance with Enhanced Capabilities of Simplify Pro and Premiere, I sit down with Paul Owens of Synopsys to talk about the latest techniques for getting the most performance out of your design tools, and therefore out of your FPGA design. You can check out this episode by heading on over to YouTube, keyword EE Journal, by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com, or by heading on over to the On Demand section on eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/eejournal. If you're into Twitter, you can check out our tweets at EEJournalTFM, and hey, if Google Plus is your thing, yes, of course, we're there as well. We also have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, full of all kinds of techie videos, our very own Chalk Talk webcast series, oh yeah, and our video series called On the Scene. Also, hey, by clicking the links below the player, did you know that you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed, or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. Well, that's all there is for this week's Fish Fry. Remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or perhaps the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of October 3rd, 2014, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.